Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training center in Denver, Colorado, this is the Dog Doctor. Committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogdoctorradio.com. The Dog Doctor is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Robert Forto, the Dog Doctor.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It is Saturday, June 5th, 2010. We have a very special guest on. I apologize for those couple of minute delay at the beginning of our show. We're having some problems with Skype. So without further ado, we have David Smith from a new company called People Food. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you very much. If you could speak up just a little bit, as we spoke at the beginning of the show, it's a little tough with a cell phone, but we're going to work through it and talk about your product. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today. It's, Colorado is gorgeous. I live here as well as you do, and you know what it's been like the last week or so.
You know, it is an awesome weekend. I tell you what, we have low 80s, and you can't get much better than that. Everybody's got the air conditioners cranking already, and I got the top off the Jeep, and we're ready for summer. How about you?
Absolutely.
So you have a company called People Food, and I know we met, I guess it was about a year ago, at the Denver Dumb Friends Furry Scurry. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. You were there that day. That was actually our launch into the market. We had never done an event before. We actually started making the food before there, but that was the first time we kind of went to the public to show them what we were trying to do for dog health through good nutrition.
And this is a very unique product. You know, we have a lot of guests on our show, and everybody has something to make themselves special. And I tell you what, this people food concept is something that is new to me. I know a lot of people, especially dog mushers, have fed raw diets and human grade type foods before, but you've taken it to the next level and you've incorporated it for all the pets. Is that correct?
Yeah, we actually decided to launch with cooked food. We cook at the lowest possible temperature, which is 165 degrees once you start cooking. And because we follow only human-grade principles, whether it's just ingredients or the actual facilities we work in and the processes we follow, we actually follow what the human standard is. And once you're cooking beef or other meats like that, you have to go to 165 degrees. But we do it for the least amount of time to maintain the nutritional quality of the food.
Is this in a commercial human kitchen?
Yes, it is, actually. If you go to Whole Foods or Vitamin Cottage here in town and you buy, say, a guacamole or a salsa or a local soup, probably made right next to me in the kitchen.
Oh,
and
there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So we're looking at – go ahead. I'm sorry.
People don't realize that dog food companies don't actually have to live by those requirements. They don't have to come close. We chose to do that on purpose to show that we really think dogs should have food at least as good as our food.
And we're looking here at your website, and it's peoplefood.com. Now, for everybody listening, it's kind of a play on words. It's food spelled F-U-D. Is that correct?
Yeah, we let the dog name it, and that's the way they spelled it.
There you go. So peoplefud.com is the website, and he has a plethora of information about what his product is all about. He even wrote a ebook that is available on Kindle, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second. So, David, tell us about your food. What separates you from, you know, everybody else, and how's your food, if it is a human-grade food, how is it different than, you know, just, you know, setting up a plate for Rover and letting him eat when you sit there at the table?
Well, actually, it's not a lot different if you know how to balance the food. Dogs are facultative carnivores, right? They're not pure carnivores like a cat, but they do need meat. They need a fair amount of meat in their diet. And really our whole philosophy can be summed up in one sentence: feed food to your dog. We don't do that very often. We have the same problem with the human food chain. lot of processed foods and a lot of subpar ingredients from farmed animals. So what we buy is only Colorado, hormone-free, antibiotic-free, grass-fed cattle and bison right now. Those are the only two protein sources we're using. So the meat that we buy, Colorado's Best Beef, for instance, is one of our suppliers. It's some of the best beef you can buy, better than most people buy for their family. We use fresh vegetables. We use new components of vegetables. You won't see the word pulp in any of our foods. You won't see any byproduct meals. You won't see any gluten extract or anything like that. We don't use corn, but, you know, corn's like getting a really bad rap lately. I don't think there's anything wrong with any food if it's a whole food that dogs can digest and get value from. And as I said, I don't use corn, but we only use whole food ingredients in everything we make.
So what brought this concept on? I know you have a story on your website, but tell our listeners as well.
Well, I had two dogs in a row that I tragically lost. The first one was, all my food is named after previous friends of mine that I've lost. So the first one was Gunther, which is actually my no gluten. He was a German Shepherd. He was actually 13 years old when I lost him. And everyone was like, well, that's good, you know, 13 for a German Shepherd. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. But he died of cancer, and it came on suddenly, and I never had a dog with cancer. But it didn't hit me too hard because of his age. Then I adopted my next dog, which is a golden retriever called Maverick, which my Maverick's Bison Beef Stew is actually named after. And I adopted him at 4 years, and at 6 years, he got cancer, and I lost him the same week. And I was devastated. I was always a dog person up until then, maybe not as educated as I think I should have been now. And I started doing the research. Started on the Internet, but you can't always depend on that. So then I started speaking with veterinarians, then holistic veterinarians, and then nutritionists and food scientists. And the food chain has been doing this to both humans and people, humans and dogs, for a while now. We're getting higher rates of digestive issues, cancer, and a lot of it is pointing to the food. There's unfortunately no great studies done because the large dog food companies, it's not really in their interest, in my opinion, for them to do a study on real food versus kibble. But there is a ton of anecdotal evidence, and there was a study done about 2 months ago in France where a gentleman, a doctor, actually studied 600 animals, dogs, that were, some were fed whole foods, some were fed processed food their whole life, and the average dog that ate whole food lived more than 30% longer on average than a dog fed processed food. And that's what I learned through my research, and I said, this is it. You know, there's four things that really affect them. It's the water, the food, chemicals that we use to clean and stuff in our lawns, and vaccinations. Well, vaccinations, I took care of that with titer tests instead of vaccinations when I don't have to get them. Water, I filtered water in my house, so I thought, okay, well, I do that for myself. I'm going to start doing that for the dogs. Chemicals, I use a lot less chemicals on my floors. And in my lawns, I try to use anything organic. I've used vinegar to clean a lot. But the last thing was the food. And everything on the marketplace, probably 90% of what's out there, when I really understood how to read a label and did the research on the ingredients, were feeding our dogs horrible food. But I'm in that 10% of the market that I believe is very good. I think you mentioned barf. I think there's great value to the barf diet. I actually do both. I feed my dogs raw as well, but I feed them my food, and I'll even give them a high-grade kibble once in a while. It's almost like a treat, but I don't feed it to them every day. And so,
and you know, there has been a lot of talk about these processed foods, as you were saying, that are causing quite a bit of health problems, including cancer. We just had on our vet for our dogs just a couple of weeks ago when we talked about canine dementia. And she was adamant about having a very high-quality diet, in the early years of a dog's life to prevent things such as, doggy Alzheimer's and other types of things, of course, cancer included. And, you know, this is kind of the next wave of dog foods is this, human-grade type meal. And I find it kind of interesting, you know, because people spend – tremendous amounts of time and tremendous amounts of money on their dogs, and they want to make sure that their dogs are taken care of as best as possible. But I think a lot of people have the misconception that you should never feed your dog human-type food. So what do you think is the answer to that, David?
Well, it's why we went with the shock value of our name. We went with people food on purpose because we actually have a lot of customers. We have, you know, we have about 20 stores here in Colorado, but we do a lot of farmers markets, which helps us get the word out. And the first thing to go is, well, you know, people food, that's not good for your dog. And I'm like, really? I hope whatever you're feeding him started out as food. Because if it didn't, do you really think you should be feeding your dog that? And have you ever seen a dog track down, kill, and eat a kibble? Because they haven't. It's a very unnatural food what we feed them. So
that is true. And dogs are one of the true omnivores in the world today. You know, even if you think about zoo animals, they feed a very similar type diet to what you're talking about, you know, human type of fruits and vegetables and things like that. And then again, our pets, the ones that we live the closest to, are eating absolutely garbage in regards to processed foods. And I tell people all the time when we talk about dog foods, you know, you're not going to live a very fluid life if you eat at McDonald's every day because of all the processed type foods. And that's not a stab at McDonald's, but that's our lifestyle, you know, eating on the go, eating quick, eating fast, eating what's readily available and easy to consume. And that's what dog food is today. You know, you get a bag at the grocery store, you stick a cup in it, you pour it into the bowl, and you're ready to go.
You know, and we're doing it with our kids, too. I don't know if you read, as I went down this path, I started reading a lot about the human food chain. And I love Michael Pollack. I don't know if you're familiar with him. In Defense of Food, Omnivore's Dilemma. Wonderful books. And we've done the same thing to ourselves. We do it to our kids. But I always ask the same question. I teach at a class for Colorado Free University on nutrition for dogs. And I get a lot of moms in there. And so I always say, you know, how many of you have kids? And I said, let me ask you a question. And this is directly related to your people food question. You know, I shouldn't feed my dog table scraps. I said, if when your child was born, the doctor came up to you with a box of cereal, and he said, hey, I have this cereal. It's nutritionally complete and balanced. We can get into that word later, right? But it's complete and balanced. It's the perfect food for your child. I want you to feed him this breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the rest of his life for peak health. Would you stay with that doctor, or would you go to another one? And every mother says, well, I'd go to another one. I'd say, why do you think feeding your dog the same cereal every day for the rest of his life is healthy for him?
You know, that's exactly right. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show with a dog sledding team, for years, mushers all over the world have fed a very protein-based type diet. And, of course, we mix everything in there to give them as much of a balance as you possibly can. But what we're looking for, of course, is the most energy. And we talk about it on the dog sledding trail. There are particular foods, both kibble and raw diet, that can be claimed to be rocket fuel. We're talking about 12,000 calories a feeding. And that's if we're talking about raw type or meat type, we're talking about you know, beaver and moose and fish, et cetera. And then for the energy source, we're talking about raw fat, just, you know, clumps of fat in with that food. So it's very similar to a human-grade soup type. I mean, obviously, a human wouldn't dare get close to it and eat it himself, but it truly is a human-grade type diet. So I know exactly what you're talking about, but my question to you, David, is how do you convince the public out there, whether you're at your farmer's market or at a pet store or at an event like the Furry Scurry, and they're looking at your product, how do you convince them that it's just not a novelty?
Basically, our sale is a very educational sale. We have to talk about the value of food for dogs, and it's kind of the conversation we've been having today. I mean, I use the anecdote of comparing the food to what you feed your child, what you feed yourself. I actually come right out and tell them, when I started this company, I was 255 pounds. I'm about 200 now. I lost that weight because I changed my diet to food. I don't eat a lot of processed food anymore. I cook a lot more, and I've seen the change not just in my dogs but in myself. I have three St. Bernards. I actually have two of my own and one that I foster all the time, you know, that switches out. But I've seen the change in these dogs once I started doing this, their coat, their health. I believe I'm going to get longevity out of that. As I said, there's a lot of anecdotal information there. And, you know, I try to do it without knocking other dog foods, because there are some great dog foods out there. I don't want to say, oh, I'm the only dog food that's actually good. But there's so much that really isn't good, so I start talking to them about labels and how to read a label and how to understand what food is versus feed, right? Because humans are sold food and animals are sold feed. There's a reason that there's a legal difference between those two words. It's because it's subpar ingredients that do not have any of the regulations that human food has. And I try to make it clear to them that you're talking about your dog's life, the length of his life, and the quality of his life. And I think those are the two subjects that we talk the most about.
And there is a heck of a lot more awareness in 2010, of course, even there was, you know, in the 80s or 90s in regards to nutrition, vet care, et cetera. You know, it's coming with the age of everything else. You know, everything is available via a Google search these days, and I think that the dog-owning public is much more educated than they used to be. So let's talk a little bit about one of your products. And can you describe that for me, David? What's in it? How much do you feed? How much does it cost, et cetera?
Okay, well, let's talk about our newest product, which is actually Maverick's grain-free bison stew. Our original recipe actually has grain, but again, I only use whole barley. I use whole foods. But in Maverick's grain bison stew, we have bison, bison heart, bison tongue, bison liver, stock, carrots, beans, sweet potato, green beans, broccoli, cauliflower, and then all our stuff has a very small set of supplements. Because we use real food, we don't feel the need to over-supplement. We think supplementation is really important on a personal level. You need to understand your dog. But we do put flax, nutritional yeast, lecithin, bone meal, and seed type and everything that we get. So, again, all this bison is grass-fed, hormone-free, antibiotic-free. We use the organ meats on purpose. Heart, bison heart and beef heart, for instance, has an excellent source of taurine, which is absolutely necessary for calves. But there's more and more evidence now that it's very important for dogs, although that they don't need it the way cats do. Cats would actually die without it. You know, and then bison liver, and then we have real bison meat and bison tongue as well. And these are real protein sources of real meat. I've eaten this stew in every one of my stews. I've eaten all my treats. There's nothing in there. Quite often they're not as palatable to a human as they would be to a dog. But the fact is, it's really good, and I have eaten them with a little salt, and then they're pretty good, but I try not to use too much salt. So these stews are always 35% or more meat by weight, by volume, right, percentage-wise, all of my stews. That's the minimum that we put in. It ranges a little bit between 35 and 40, depending on the recipe. We believe that they need more than a third meat in their diet. We believe that this is a complete nutrition for a dog. We did not do AFCO certification, which you don't have to do in the U.S., and frankly, it's not indicative of health. It's indicative of something completely different, the way that works if you're not familiar with it. That's a long technical story. But then the vegetables and the potatoes, so we have a nice mix of proteins, carbs, fat. When you talk about fat for dogs, people don't understand the difference between fats and fat, right? You know, fats don't make you fat. They have incredible amino acids and omegas in them. They're very valuable for dogs. We do not trim the meat and try to do a lean one. If you're trying to worry about your dog losing weight, look at the calories. Don't look at don't look at fat and think you're going to make your dog fat. So I kind of got off the subject there, but that's it. Maverick's grain-free bison stew. Four meats are the first four main ingredients, and they're always more than 35% of what's on it. Dogs absolutely love it.
And how is it packaged, and how much does it cost?
Obviously the cost ranges, but we have a one-pound tub, which is kind of like a salsa or guacamole tub that you get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And then we also have the three-pound bags. Which are Ziploc bags, but you can just take that. We sell it frozen. you thaw it out and use it over a period of 10 days. Our food will go bad because it's food. We use no preservatives and no chemicals. And the question on price, of course, ranges, but it's probably $6.99 for the small one, $6.99, $7.99, and then the 3-pounder, which is obviously 3 times as much, ranges from $14.99 to $18.99, depending on the size and what store you're in.
So with this 3-pound package, how much are you feeding your dog each day? Obviously, it depends on size, but let's take a Labrador Retriever, you know, America's family dog. How much are you feeding a Labrador, and how often?
What we're finding is large dog people are using this as a supplement. We understand it's expensive, and our thing is to get some real food in the dog's diet every day. But if he ate it exclusively, he'd be eating about a pound to a pound and a half, depending on his level of activity a day.
So with that, that's about $4 to $5 a day for your dog's food, which would be about $150 a month, right?
Yes, it would.
Do you think that that's unreasonable for a lot of people, or what are you finding in terms of your feedback from your clients in regards to cost?
What I find is that small dog people are perfectly willing to do it. Obviously, it's a lot easier for them to handle it when they have a Pomeranian or even a pug. When I have big dog people, I work with Colorado Safe and Out Rescue, and a lot of those people have used my food. They use it as a supplement. So what they do is they buy high-grade kibbles, and then they make sure that they get some real food in the dog's diet every day. So they'll go with like a half a cup to a cup just to make sure that they get him some real food. We've been growing for a year straight, and people are realizing the value of the nutritional value to dogs, so they are trying to feed it to them whenever they can afford it.
What about shipping? I know shipping of dry kibble is very expensive. We offer several brands at our school, and to ship a bag of what we sell costs more than it does for the food itself. So what are we talking about if you do have to ship it? Is it even available by shipping? Do you do it by dry ice, or what do you do?
Actually, we're experimenting with that right now. What we do in Colorado is we will deliver to your house as long as you order $75 or more from Boulder to Parker. But outside of that, we do not ship yet. We're experimenting with the dry ice because exactly what you said. What happens is shipping becomes more expensive than the food, so this person has to be really dedicated. And at that point, I've happily given people advice on the phone when they live far away. I'm like, I can't help you right now, but listen, this is what you have to do to make your dog's food. It's very difficult. That's one of the reasons we do it and we are successful, is people do want to make their dog's food. They do want to improve it. But once they try it, they can't do it themselves. So hopefully I'll be shipping by the end of the year, and then I can have another conversation with you about that.
That would be great. And, they ship vaccines that way as well. I mean, if you order from some of the big manufacturers, they'll ship it out, in an ice pack or whatever, and it still comes in frozen. So I would imagine they can do, not frozen, but, cold. So I would imagine you could do it with a product like this. They, like Omaha Steaks and other places like that, they ship their fine quality steaks all over the world. So I think that really would open up your market quite a bit. And the reason that I'm mentioning this, obviously, is we have people listening all over the world on this show. And, it's just not exclusive to Denver. So I want to make sure that you can reach the people that are listening. So Michelle has a question here, and she's kind of sitting back just listening. Is she says, why not offer it in smaller containers since a majority of the people are using it as a supplement?
The smaller container is fairly small, and the real problem is in the retail world today is packaging is a very big problem with this type of product. It has to be attractive, and it has to handle, in my case, it has to handle heat and flash freezing. So the containers you get have got to be able to handle this, so it makes them expensive. So that's why when you buy a 1-pounder compared to a 3-pounder, the 3-pounder is only double the price. And people ask me that all the time. why is it only double the price? We're getting three times less. I'm like, well, it's cheaper for me to put it in that one big container. And I mean, I can't wait till I can make 5 and 10 pounders because I'll be able to lower the price for people that really want it in that kind of volume. So that's so if I go to a smaller container than I already have for a really small dog, they're going to be paying so much per pound, I can't even justify it.
And, you know, that's an excellent point about the packaging. I remember when I was working in 7-Eleven in college, we used to have to count the big gulp cups at night because that's where the price is. The price isn't in the soda or the water or the ice or anything. It's in the cup. And I remember every night I used to work the night shift, and we would have to tally up how many cups are, you know, in the rack or whatever, and then we'd have to quantify that with however many we rang up in the register. And, if it was off, we would get dinged for that. And I can see exactly what you're saying in regards to packaging. Just like anything else, that is where your cost is, but that's also your first point of sale. If it's in, you know, very drab packaging, nobody's going to buy it. And that's why generic products are so successful because of the low price, because it's just got a brown wrapper. And, you know, what I'm thinking of are those you know, the cereals at the grocery store, the Apple Jacks or whatever, it's the same exact Apple Jacks that's in the fancy box, but it's in a very inexpensive bag.
Right.
So,
right. And if I could get to that, I would love to. Of course, my packaging also has the hot and cold limitation as well.
Right, right. So where is it available here in Colorado? And I see on your website that you can purchase it on your website through credit card and or PayPal. And you will deliver here in the Denver area from Boulder to Parker. And that's a pretty big area to do so. Are you on Facebook, David?
Actually, we just opened a Facebook page. We are on Twitter.
Okay, okay. Because we have all kinds of people on our Facebook page. And when you get that up and going, send me a link, and I'll link it back to this show as well as your Facebook page. Because there are quite a few people here in Denver that do listen to us. So, since you're just starting out here in the market, we might as well see if we can promote you a little bit, a little cross-promotion, and really see what your product is all about. So my next question is, and we have about 10 minutes left, so I want to make sure that we get everything covered. My next question is what about dogs that need special diets for, you know, kidney disease or something like that, and they're prescribed particular diets from their vet? How do you handle that, or can you handle something like that?
Well, it depends on the issue. There are some issues that are, you know, very severe, and they really need to be careful what they feed. I'm not a big fan of most prescription diets, but there is a time and a place for some of them. I think just like drugs in both the human world and the dog world, we are too fast to assign something that's supposed to be, you know, somehow medically relevant to actually treat a dog or a person. And a prescription diet is that kind of thing. Whole foods will quite often be just fine with most dogs with most conditions. We don't have a high glycemic index on our food. We have no added salt unless it's sea salt, which has great trace minerals. And we have no added sugars. So for diabetic dogs, our food should be fine. There is so much conflicting evidence with, like, older dogs should have a lower protein diet or big dogs should have a lower protein diet. I think what it really comes down to is fresh food is probably a good way to try to see if your dog can heal himself most of the time. If he's got a very severe medical issue, it's not like I don't go to veterinarians, I do, but I always look at something that may be much more less invasive at first. And diet is the number one thing. One of my favorite books is for people who want to make their own food or address their dog's issues is Richard Pitcairn's Natural Dog and Health Care. Are you familiar with that?
What is it again?
Richard Pitcairn's Natural, it's a book for natural dog and care, dog and cat care.
No, I haven't heard of it. We have a trainer on our staff that is really big into this type of research in regards to human-type foods and raw diets and all this sort of stuff. And I'm going to make sure that that she looks into this pretty hot and heavy, and you know, do a little bit of a test study. So my next question, David, and these next two questions are just going to put you on the spot just a little bit. My next question is you said that a lot of people supplement with a high quality kibble. So if they're doing that and they're feeding your food, isn't that defeating the purpose of what you're trying to accomplish a little bit?
It would be. I would rather them obviously feed the dogs only all whole food. But because, it, you know, no matter how much someone loves their dog, they're a little, if it's a big dog, they're like, well, I'm paying the same amount to feed that dog as me. My food, my beef stew, costs the same as a human beef stew in, say, a Tony's Market or a Whole Foods. Because it's the same type of ingredients. It's just balanced differently for a dog. So if that's the case, my plea to people is to get whole food in the dog's diet every day, even if it's not only whole food. You know, once in a while, Doc, I actually will have a bag of Fritos. I love chips. I just don't eat them all the time. I don't eat that as a meal, you know. But I do have it once in a while, and it's okay to have a snack or something a little different. But when you can, you should be having whole vegetables, real fresh meat, and whole grains in a human diet and a dog's diet if he doesn't have a grain issue.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody's guilty of the simple pleasures in life, whether it's chips or soda or chocolate or whatever. So with that same point in regards to the price, you know, I am amazed, and I talk about it all the time on this show, when people balk at price on anything. But you know who you find to balk at the most pricing is the same people that are spending $15 or $20 a day with their dog at a daycare. And they say, oh, I can't afford to spend $5 a day or whatever on food, but they have no problem spending $15 or $20 a day at a daycare. What is your response to that, David?
I'm amazed at the people who come to me at the farmer's market with a $5 cup of coffee in their hand, and they will not try some of my food for supposedly the best friend in the world.
Right.
It breaks my heart when I see that happen. At the same time, I have people that come up to me that, you know, they may not have a lot of money, they may not have, you know, the best job in the world, but every week they'll come by and they'll buy something to get their dog some really good food in their diet. So, you know, my clientele, yeah, you know, the fact is someone who dresses their chihuahua in a pink tutu, strangely enough, is not the person who buys my food most of the time.
Right.
It's more the person that is actually attention to their own body and their own nutrition and gets the story right away. And they're like, you know what, it's worth paying a little more to improve his diet for right now. And I'll buy it when I can. And when I can't, I have to feed them subpar food, but I'm going to try to do this more often. Or maybe they just start buying meat themselves, which, as I don't want people to buy my food, I teach a nutrition class so people can make their own food.
And I would imagine we don't want to put you out of business, but I imagine that a person at home can make it for pennies compared to what that you're charging, and you're charging the amount for the convenience of, here you go, Fido, here it is.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't possibly make the argument that it's cheaper to buy for me. It's just that if there's a convenience issue, and you don't want to worry about proportions and how much you're giving the dog, you know, meat to vegetable to grain or to whatever, you know, that's when people actually want to turn to it. That's why we bought dog food today, right? Is because the marketing is telling you, complete and balanced. If you don't feed this for your dog, it's bad. I don't really believe that. I do believe there's a balance to the food. But it's not as, you know, I think there's a scare tactic out there that you can't do it yourself. It's not that hard to figure out how to make it correctly. It is hard to have the discipline to shop every week for your dog at the same time as you and then prepare stews or whatever it is you're going to cook. So you know, I don't argue the point that people can make it less at home. If they can, good on them. I'm really happy that they're doing that for the dog.
You know, and I think Michelle could argue with that in regards to it costing less at home. Last weekend, I was going to prepare a meal for the family, and I went out with my little shopping list, and I bought about $60 worth of stuff. You know, I didn't think we had any of the spices or whatever, so I went out and bought new spices, and I went out and bought new, you know, everything. So the meal cost more than it would probably cost to take the entire family out to a very nice restaurant because I went out and bought foolishly because I didn't pay any attention. So I just wanted to bring that up. It's just a little my own stab in the back there. So my next question, David, is what about issues that you're having? And I know it's human grade and I know it's cooked and all that, but we do a lot of work with working dogs, in particular service dogs and therapy dogs. And one of the service dog registry organizations has said that they will not allow any type of human type and or raw diet for any of their dogs because of the bacteria. Now, since you are in the food business, and I know it's an entirely different product, but I want to get your opinion on that. How do people deal with something like that?
Well, you know, the things with the raw foods and stuff, they're excellent for dogs. You do have to handle them correctly. It's one of the reasons we entered the market as a cooked food. There's a lot of people that are very much afraid of it. I mean, I don't think they should be, but they are. And I plan on having a raw food line as well. But, you know, the service dog industry doing that, I actually did a promotion just 2 weeks ago at 6th Avenue Pet Source where we were trying to raise money for a new police dog. So I talked to the police guys, and I said, hey, would you like a nutrition class? Would you like to try the food? You know, I'd love to give you some. They're like, oh, no, we have a food. We don't use anything else. And it's really strange that service dog people do not buy a food more like mine or use raw food because those dogs may, you know, they cost a fortune, thousands and thousands of dollars just to get one without the training, and then thousands of dollars to train them and keep them trained throughout their lifetime and the upkeep. When you lose one of those dogs, if you can extend his life by just 2 years, his effective work life by 2 years, you will save all the money that you spent on, you know, a subpar kibble by doing a raw diet or something like that, because you got that much more service out of the dog, especially in the private sector. Those dogs can be worth $60,000 to $70,000 a year in revenue. And when you think of that, 1 year, spending that dog's 1 year is making up for all the money you spend on good food. And I'm so surprised that those people have that attitude, but I've seen it before myself, if that answers your question.
That answers it perfectly. So, David, we only have a couple of minutes left. Tell people how they can get in contact with you. Also, mention about your ebook that you have on Kindle. You need to get out there and get that on the iPad. That's the rave of the future, and we give them away at our dog training school for our students. So, tell us a little bit about your ebook as well as how to get in contact with you.
Okay, well, PeopleFood is actually, peoplefood.com is probably the best place to get it, and it is PeopleFud, F-U-D. That's probably the best way. We have all our contact information out there, and so you can look us up. But on the book, I actually wrote a very small booklet, actually, about bad eats, because so many people ask me questions about things like chocolate, onions, and macadamia nuts. And things that dogs shouldn't eat, you know, which is the people food scare, right? I shouldn't feed my dog people food. It's bad for him. And no, it's not. But there are some things. And so I wrote a booklet with a precise amounts that a dog can handle without before they go into danger eating chocolate, onions, macadamia nuts, because I think it's important. I get that question all the time. Well, how much, you know, if my dog eats, you know, my St. Bernard eats a two-bite brownie, he shouldn't. I don't feed it to him, but if he steals one when I'm not looking, he's going to be fine. He's, you know, 150-pound dog, right? But if you have, you know, half an ounce of baking chocolate that a pug ate, you'll probably kill him. So it's really important that owners know the things that are dangerous for their dogs. Fortunately, a lot of them dogs aren't interested in, like onions, which are bad, especially over time. But unfortunately, they do like chocolate, and they do like macadamia nuts. So you have to hide these things and make sure they don't get them. And be aware of the things of things like amounts so that you know when you see that your dog just ate something, you're thinking, how much was there? Okay, it was about an ounce. Let me look at something. So I have the charts in the booklet, so you can easily just look at it and say, oh, okay, no, he's okay. He didn't eat anywhere near what I had to worry about. And I'm going to expand that book and start writing about other foods. There's of course, grapes, and then there's other dangerous items like, the coolant in cars, and all these strange foods that dogs sometimes get and kills them. It's just heartbreaking.
David, does the book also include David, does the booklet also include, you know, you were talking earlier about the harmful chemicals in the yards and the pesticides and things. Does it include anything about that as well?
Not yet. I'm going to come out with a second edition. I've actually written an article about chemicals. I've written an article about the water. And then I have a couple of basic kind of broad philosophy about the whole food, having a whole food diet. And I'm going to add that to an edition that should be out in the next 2 months or so.
We look forward to reading it. And you can purchase that book on Amazon.com. And if you go to, I believe it's called the Kindle Store, you can get it for $6.99 on Amazon.com. I don't know if you can get it. Can you get it through your website as well, David?
There's a link to it on there, but basically you just buy it through Amazon. Amazon's the only one that publishes on the Kindle. So.
Okay. Well, David, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure, and we're going to have you on again real soon when we are at an event or something. We'll have you on live so we don't have the issues with the Skype and all that. We're always dealing with we're slaves to technology here on this show. So, David, give us a phone number where people can give you a call.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me today. I'll come back anytime. I actually listen to your show all the time. I think you guys are great. I'm glad you're out there.
Thank you very much. And what's the phone number?
303-961-5524.
Okay, well, we'll forward any comments or concerns that we get here on the show. We'll forward them over to you by email. The show is always available, so you might get a comment 6 months from now, but we'll forward that along to you on email. And for people that are listening, if you have any comments or feedback, make sure you send us an email at live@dogdoctorradio.com. That is live@dogdoctorradio.com. David, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, part of Twine Group Media, and brought to you by Denver Dog Works. We're here every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. You can find us on thedenverdogworks.com. or on blogtalkradio.com/dogworks. Next week, have no idea what we're doing. We're open for suggestions, so send us an email and let us know. We'll be happy to talk to you about it. My name is Dr. Robert Forto. On behalf of my co-host, Michelle, we'll see you next week. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.